And a very good morning to you. It's 11 o'clock, and you're listening to, of course, to your public radio station, Red River Radio, and time for another Spotlight here. I'm Kermit Bowling, GM here at Red River Radio. Joining me in the studio, Michael Butterman, the music director of the Shreveport Symphony. And this weekend's featured soloist, actually in two performances by the symphony, is the principal clarinetist from the Philadelphia Orchestra, that is Ricardo Morales. And good morning to you both, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Kermit.
It's going to be a Mozart weekend, that's for sure, among some other music, of course, but Mozart on two concerts and a little bit more. Michael, why don't you talk about what's in store?
Glad to, yeah. In fact, the way we've been billing this is sort of focused on Mozart, but in fact, the main motivation for the program at this particular time and in the location in which it's taking place is a work by Mendelssohn, the Reformation Symphony. As your listeners may know, we're coming up on the 500th anniversary, almost to the day, of the posting of the 95 Theses on the cathedral door in Wittenberg by Martin Luther, which is, I guess, as reasonable a point as any to reckon as the beginning of the Reformation. And Felix Mendelssohn wrote a work in 1830 that was celebrating at that time the 300th anniversary of the Augsburg Confession, not the posting of the theses, but the Augsburg Confession, which was a gathering of Reformationists, I guess you would say, who created a statement of faith, kind of articles that codified in some way what Luther had been describing a few years earlier. And there was to be a celebration in Germany at the time, and Mendelssohn, who was a young composer and conductor, wanted actually to have a symphony presented as part of that celebration. Turns out it was not, for a variety of reasons, including the fact that it took him a little longer to write it than he thought because he contracted measles along the way. And he had a really rather difficult time getting it premiered, and it was rejected in Paris because it was called too learned and a little too complicated, perhaps, in some respects. But he eventually did come up with a performance that he himself conducted in Berlin in 1832. And he was not published, however, during his lifetime. It's called Number 5, his Symphony Number 5, even though it was the second symphony that he wrote. Yeah. And so there had been four others published by the time they were getting around to creating a collected works edition in the 1860s. And it's not, in fact, clear that Mendelssohn intended anyone to hear it after it was premiered. In fact, he rather had a low opinion of it, so he said.
Anyway, yes, but we're all sneaky about that. Well, we perform it anyway.
We do, and it's a little bit like reading someone's diary who never really intended you. There's a little sense of should we be doing this if he didn't think of it? But it's I think it's a magnificent piece, if I may substitute my own judgment for that of Mendelssohn. But it's a piece that Ricardo was mentioning it last night. You know, it doesn't get played all that often, and yet when it comes up, you think, yeah, this is really great.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Yes, and quite lyrical, and also it's I love the drama of it. So it does seem quite advanced when one compares it to the Italian symphony, which is very happy but sort of straightforward. This one has so many more layers, and it makes it a magnificent piece to hear.
Indeed, and it's got these obviously references to religious notions, especially the chorale, A Mighty Fortress, in the end of the piece in the last movement. But also at the beginning, there's some moments of the cadence called the Dresden Amen, which meant something especially to the people of the day. And even a little reference to counterpoint at the very beginning. Really, actually, it's the beginning of the Jupiter Symphony of Mozart, but transposed. I'm pretty sure he intended to do that as a kind of a contrast, maybe that representing perhaps almost the traditionalist of approach that was being, contrasted by that of Luther's approach to theology and so on. The two middle movements, in some ways, the second movement in particular, has a kind of bounciness to it that is, I just think, very Mendelssohnian, not particularly related to the, in fact, not related to the Reformation as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Although I got to say, the tune, that yep-da-da-da, sounds like a kind of prayer meeting kind of tune. Like if you find something very similar in a lot of folk music kind of dating from that, especially American folk music, which of course probably came from an inspiration of that. I've always thought that it seemed like a little prayer meeting kind of.
I could see that. I certainly never heard it that way.
I've never researched it, but yeah. I've thought about it every time I've done the piece.
And entirely possible.
There's got to be some source there somewhere.
It could very well be. So we're playing that on the second half of the program. We're opening the program with music of Respighi. And the reason it's his Ancient Airs and Dances Suite Number 3. The reason I chose that was because Respighi, our listeners may know, wrote Pines of Rome, Fountains of Rome, these sort of lush, big orchestral tone poems. But he also was a bit of a scholar and archivist, I suppose, was interested in early Italian music and wrote a number of pieces that were based on earlier music. There's the suite The Birds, which has that Italian Renaissance feel to it, as well as three suites of Ancient Airs and Dances. The pieces on the in the third suite are ones that were written during the 16th century from Italy. My theory there being, well, we're not going to hear Renaissance music on this program, but we're at least going to hear some music that was being played in Europe somewhere around the same time that Martin Luther was alive and doing his work as a musician and reformer, and beautiful stuff for sure, for strings. Then, of course, this fantastic single gem of a clarinet concerto by Mozart that Riccardo will be playing, sort of to bring the first half of the program to a beautiful conclusion.
Sure, and Riccardo, as long as Michael has set that up, why don't you talk about the concerto?
Well, obviously the Mozart concerto is our staple, is our number one concerto that we love the most, and we constantly work on, and one of the things that I love the most about it is the little bit of the history about it, it being so close to Mozart's death, and with the tonal and the feeling that it has, that it's a real mixture between the sounds that you can hear in Magic Flute, and how he used the clarinet, how he loved the clarinet, but he loved the purity of the sound and the purity of the approach, and seeing how he used the clarinet in a lot of his operatic works. Usually you will see that many times when it is feature, like in Clemenza di Tito, or particularly the beginning of the finale of Magic Flute, where it's leading a chorale, and it's the music of the angels, and Clemenza di Tito is talking about just love that is that not necessarily romantic love, but just like an quote-unquote elevated love, so a little purer. So a lot of the music in the concerto resembles that, especially the beautiful adagio second movement.
Yeah, which has got to be one of the most beautiful things ever written,
yes.
Period. Such a beautiful movement. And as you mentioned, I mean, this is from the end of Mozart's life. Like, he saved some of his best music for then when he wasn't necessarily well. But again, for whatever reason, clarinets play it a lot, but I don't think the Shreveport Symphony has featured it in quite a number of years. So
that may be. I mean, we haven't done it during my tenure here, and but it's one of the. I mean, what is kind of amazing about it to me is that it's certainly the. As Riccardo said, this is written in 1791, the last year of Mozart's life, just a couple of months, in fact, before he died. And it was still, even then, the clarinet was, I think, safe to say, a relatively new instrument within.
Absolutely. Well, it was invented in 1690, which is quite late. I mean, 1690, Stradivari was done with all his decorated instruments. Starting the one pattern is like a complete advanced age of already of string instrument design, etc. But he was always quite a modernist. He always liked bringing new sounds, etc. And in fact, he wished that he could use it much more often. But there's a letter of Mozart writing to his father about how he wished that there were more clarinets like in Salzburg, and that's how come a lot of his works that were premiered there, they didn't have it, and he made arrangements, changes, sort of like in the 40th Symphony, the original one without, and then for the Vienna premiere, then he added clarinets.
Right.
So this performance is tomorrow night. Today's Friday. Yeah, tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. And unusually for a Masterworks concert of the symphony, it is not downtown. It is at First Baptist Church in the big, beautiful, gorgeous sanctuary on Ockley that I think people certainly in the Shreveport area will know. But if you're coming in out of town for that, set your destination for 543 Ockley. That's First Baptist Church in Shreveport, which I think for a program like this, it's such a unique classic hall. I always think of European Concert Hall whenever I'm in there.
It has that shape, certainly, yeah. And that approach where there's not like a shell around the orchestra itself. It just, the sound kind of goes up and blooms. It's a really lovely acoustic and a beautiful, of course, just a beautiful space. The parking is great. There's a wonderful place to have a pre-concert talk, which is happening at 6:30. So it's or maybe it's 6:40. In any case. But before the concert, we know that much. It's a little taste of probably what's going to be happening next season with the symphony. I think it's fair to say, as the Riverview Theater is slated for some renovations, we're going to be holding most of our masterworks there next season. This is the only one this season, but it's a chance to kind of dip our toes into the water and test it out. But as you said, just both for the repertoire and in particular the religious overtones of this Mendelssohn piece, it is a good fit. And it's there at Frost Chapel the next day that Ricardo and his wife and some members of our orchestra are going to be presenting a chamber music concert.
Right, with more Mozart on it. And I know that the quintet is yes. on there. So, Ricardo, why don't you talk a little bit about that as well?
Oh, well, I'm really looking forward to having the opportunity to share some more intimate music making with some of the wonderful musicians from the Shreveport Symphony. And it is just always really interesting to see how many connections we end up having. You know, we were just previously talking yeah. about our own, you know, how we were just had our relationship from having Puerto Rico in there.
Yeah, Ricardo would yes. have been a little kid in the youth orchestra down there yes. back in my years at in the Puerto Rico Symphony and at the
Amazing.
Conservatory there.
Yes. So it's just great. We know so many people. So the connections are really wonderful how we get those wonderful opportunities to do those things. And, of course, Mozart is one of those also, we have three major big quintets that we could call it, but two major quintets, the Brahms and the Mozart clarinet quintets. The weak clarinet players talk about the Weber, but it's mainly more embarrassingly Weber clarinet concerto with four, begrudgingly string players. So a little bit like that. So I won't call that one the big quintet, but it, yeah, as clarinet players, we appreciate it very
sure
much.
Do, yes.
No, but Mozart, what can be said about Mozart? It's just a really wonderful piece. Some of the parts in the concerto, there's a little mini cadenza in the slow movement that is traditionally played from a little throwback from the quintet that is used. And, of course, we'll juice it up a little bit, add a little extra, you know, since we're having fun over here. But, yes, it's always just a magnificent opportunity for music sharing.
So that that concert is part of the Knoll Foundation Chamber Series they collaborate with the Shreveport Symphony and support that program Sunday 3:00, and it's in Frost Chapel, so the smaller venue there at First Baptist Church, and also a great place where for years the Shreveport Symphony has presented chamber concerts. So it's a perfect venue for that as well. And smaller, so it's a much more intimate setting, so people can get up closer, and it's free.
All good things.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Sunday, that performance, 3:00, and again, open to the public, free performance, and another opportunity to hear Ricardo Morales along with Shreveport Symphony players, and of course the other program we're talking about tomorrow night with the Reformation Symphony of Mendelssohn. 7:30 p.m. And for tickets to that one is a paid concert, you can go to shreveportsymphony.com or you can call 318-227-TUNE. That's 8863, 318-227-8863 for that performance of Mendelssohn, Mozart, and Respighi.
Could I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Of our guest here.
Yeah.
You know, so we often are sitting here, Kermit, you and I, talking to violinists and pianists, especially, who, you know, this week they're here and the next week they're, you know, a different city every week playing maybe a different concerto and so on. I think it's fair to say, in your position, Ricardo, most weeks you are in Philadelphia, or perhaps on tour with the Philadelphia Orchestra, but you are playing in one of the world's great orchestras. But there, your job, obviously, there are solos for principal woodwinds all the time in orchestral rep, but you're also very much a part of an ensemble. You are part of a choir where you need to blend and so on. When you step out of that role, not even so much in chamber music, but in a solo concerto like the Mozart, what changes? Anything? Do you have a different approach to your tone production? Do you just talk
well,
about
it. Interestingly, for this kind of piece, the approach in terms of a woodwind player doing solo work and being part of the orchestra, there is a little bit more. Just a little bit of a priority to be able to project, but you actually don't have to work so hard because you are in the front of the orchestra. But the Mozart concerto is, interestingly enough, is one where there's a true collaboration with the orchestra. So it is, I try to treat it much more like a big chamber ensemble piece.
Okay.
Of course, there's many places where the clarinet is featured much more easily, and you can see that and one can hear it. But I believe that my experience have been much more similar. I try to treat good music the way that we treat good music, and one of the important things is to understand the role and when the part that one is playing has to have a little bit more prominence than at other times.
Right, absolutely. Well, I love that. Yeah, just a sense of there's the chamber music that you're going to be playing on Sunday, and then there's sort of somewhat bigger chamber music.
Yes.
Big chamber music.
Right.
So that performance again, that is tomorrow evening, 7:30 p.m. and again at First Baptist Church. So make sure you keep that in mind. Don't head downtown. The First Baptist Church sanctuary, a beautiful place to both see and also to listen to it in the great acoustic, great for this music that we'll be doing. Anything else you want to add, Michael?
I'm just excited about it and looking forward to sharing this wonderful piece that Ricardo's been playing, which, as you point out, we haven't played in some time here. And the Mendelssohn, which I gather has probably not been played in quite a bit much longer time than the Mozart.
Yeah, well, I've done it with a couple of other orchestras in the area here, but I don't think Shreveport's done it in at least 15 years. So again, it's overdue, and this is a perfect year for it.
Sure.
As you were saying, because of the 500th anniversary. So be sure to come and join us tomorrow at First Baptist Church, and then Sunday for the chamber concert, also at First Baptist, but in the Frost Chapel. Again, for tickets, go to ShreveportSymphony.com, or you can call 318-227-8863. And Ricardo Morales and Michael Butterman, thanks again, as always, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.